The first thought that came to me when I was asked to speak at today's meeting was, who would want to hear me speak? As I paused to listen for an answer, I heard this. They don't want to hear you speak. They want to hear me. So here's what God is sharing with us. For years, I enjoyed attending the Wednesday night testimony meetings at my branch church, knowing I would be treated to hearing example after example of healings occurring at the San Francisco Airport reading room. Fellow member Andrea Moon would share how she explained Christian Science to the newcomer, and then she would relate healings of all manner of sickness all manner of disease that happened during her conversations. I remember thinking that I could never carry on conversations like she did. Now, doesn't that sound like personal sense? I used to think that I could not have those kinds of conversations. That sounds like a little or lowercase I, rather than a big or uppercase I, which is God. Andrea said she never felt responsible for what she was going to say, but felt like she had a seat on the 50-yard line and got to watch God in action. When I started volunteering as a Christian Science chaplain in the Santa Clara and San Mateo County jails, I learned firsthand what she meant. I witnessed what Andrea described about God using our mouths, and the words would simply flow when speaking with inmates. And now, having served as a volunteer at the airport reading room for almost a year, the same thing occurs when speaking with visitors in the reading room. In thinking about the title of the talk, the word universal means of, pertaining to, extending to, or affecting the entire world, worldwide. And panacea means a remedy for all diseases, evils, or difficulties, cure all. Therefore, the universal panacea is what? It's the remedy for everything, everywhere. When might one utilize a universal panacea? We know from the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer on page 16 of our textbook that our Father, Mother, God is all harmonious. Therefore, any situation or circumstance we wouldn't consider all harmonious or complete bliss presents an opportunity to invoke this universal panacea. It may be tempting to think that actions of an individual, institution, or corporate body don't always fall into this all-harmonious or blissful category. But Mary Baker Eddy instructs us that evil is neither person, place, nor thing, but is simply a belief, an illusion of material sense. Therefore, any inharmonious situation or circumstance is simply a suggestion of the carnal mind, proposing that there is a power and a presence other than God, good, or it is, as our textbook states, the world's hatred of truth and love. The word hatred is quite strong, a word we don't often use. One definition of hatred is intense dislike, the object of extreme aversion or hostility. What might this hatred look like? I guess it could be anything that would try to stop our spiritual progress. It could be doubt in the ability of Christian Science to heal all manner of sickness, or pressure to go down a path in life that doesn't seem right, or being so involved with everyday obligations or distractions that our time for study and prayer gets squeezed out. An article from the June 1971 Journal explains, "The carnal mind will put up strong resistance, for the universal establishment of church in consciousness signals the doom of error." The Gospel of John records Jesus as saying, "Be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." On page 144 of our textbook, we read, "When the science of being is universally understood, every man will be his own physician, and truth will be the universal panacea." We also are familiar with this statement from miscellaneous writings: "Christian Science is indeed the comforter that will lead us into all truth." In the manual, we find this revelation of the comforter includes the establishment of reading rooms, even jointly maintained reading rooms. This comforter is here, and nothing can stop the comforter from fulfilling its mission. We know the dawn always wins, right? Darkness has no power to hold back light. There isn't a fight or a battle. The light just always wins. So too, the attempts by mortal mind to limit access to the light of truth will fail. Why? Because truth is always the victor. I grew up in Southern California. Driving up Crenshaw Boulevard on a clear day, I could look out at the ocean and see Catalina Island in the distance. However, living near the coast, many times there was fog, sometimes so thick we couldn't see the lines on the road. If we were driving up Crenshaw Boulevard on a foggy day and looked out to the ocean, not only did we not see the ocean, but we couldn't see Catalina Island. But you know, not once was I ever concerned or worried that Catalina Island was no longer there. Regardless of what my eyes, the physical senses, were reporting, I knew the truth, that Catalina Island and its inhabitants were intact and safe. It didn't matter if the fog only lasted for a few hours in the morning, or if it lasted a whole week. Nothing could convince me of anything other than the truth. We are all familiar with this statement by Jesus: "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Once we know the truth, we can no longer be tricked by a lie. Using the definition of panacea, we conclude that truth is the cure-all. What are some other examples of false views that might initially trick us? When we see an airplane taking off from SFO, it gets smaller and smaller as it goes up into the sky until finally it disappears. Are we ever concerned that the passengers inside are getting crushed? Or that they and the airplane actually disappear? No, because we understand the true facts. that what we are seeing is an illusion. If we don't understand this, we may not want to travel by airplane and might instead consider taking a train. But let's say we haven't before been on a train and are therefore surprised and dismayed to see that the train tracks touch not too far from the station. Our traveling companions would, of course, tell us not to worry that the tracks don't actually touch. We could even call a Christian Science practitioner for support who would tell us the same thing, that what we're seeing is an illusion. When we learn the truth that train tracks don't touch and that airplanes don't shrink, we will fearlessly go forward with our travel plans. This sounds like a familiar Bible story in the book of Mark. The disciples and Jesus are traveling by boat. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. And Jesus was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and say unto him, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" And he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, "Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith?" Did you ever wonder why Jesus didn't wake up? I mean, the Bible account says the waves were coming into the ship so that it was now full. Wouldn't he have gotten wet? One student of Christian Science pondered that question. And the answer that came to them was, there was no storm. Isn't that always the case? There's never a storm, either with the weather, or health, relationships, or government. Why? Because the true view is all harmonious. This statement is the universal panacea for any inharmonious situation or condition. If what we're seeing isn't all harmonious, we aren't seeing the true view. Let's also examine the universal panacea of love. The textbook states, "In patient obedience to a patient God, let us labor to dissolve with the universal solvent of love the adamant of error, self-will, self-justification, and self-love, which wars against spirituality and is the law of sin and death." I love the definition of adamant, a perceived impenetrable hardness. A few weeks ago, I attended a Bible seminar which covered the second half of Genesis. Part of the discussion involved the Joseph stories, which begin in Genesis 37 and run through the end of the book. Although Joseph may have been a bit of an arrogant teenager, telling his brothers and father that they would bow down to him, we read about how his brothers' hatred and resentment of him resulted in them selling Joseph into slavery. Later, the brothers presented a torn and bloody coat to Jacob, their father. Remember their words referring to the coat? "Look at what we found. Doesn't this robe belong to your son?" What happened next? Jacob recognized the coat and went along with the description that Joseph had been killed by wild animals. But what was actually going on? Joseph wasn't dead. His life continued on. Joseph recognized that God was, in fact, always in complete control when he later told his brothers, "Ye sought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to save much people alive." Or how about when Mrs. Potiphar unjustly accused Joseph of sexual misconduct? Or when the cupbearer, whose dream Joseph had correctly interpreted, forgot to mention Joseph's skills when the cupbearer was reinstated in Pharaoh's household? Looking back on the story, we see each step in Joseph's journey was required before he could fulfill his ultimate mission. First, he learned the important lesson of humility. Like it or not, he submitted to God's plan. Next, he learned how to organize and run a household, and then how to care for others. After learning these lessons, he was then ready to reply when brought before Pharaoh, "It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." After interpreting Pharaoh's dreams, Joseph was assigned the task of running the country. "Only in the throne will I be greater than thou," said Pharaoh, and preserving the earth. From the text, we don't get the impression that Joseph wallowed in self-pity or resentment when he found himself in Egypt, or when he found himself in jail under fraudulent charges, nor when the cupbearer neglected to mention his skills to Pharaoh. Joseph didn't react or respond to the conditions and circumstances, but simply loved God and continued on. Mary Baker Eddy summarizes this on page 355 of Miscellaneous Writings, where she states, "To strike out right and left against the mist never clears the vision, but to lift your head above it is a sovereign panacea." Joseph saw God's hand leading throughout his life experiences. And we too know to turn away from the chaos or disappointment paraded before our consciousness by the carnal mind and turn toward the harmony and bliss we know, through spiritual sense, are already present. This Christ consciousness is the universal panacea. About a year ago, participating and contributing churches were sent a letter which told of the need for additional funding and volunteers at the airport reading room. As Brent shared in his report, there was a great response, and those needs were met. Or, to use the example from Genesis, the view of a torn and bloody coat was not believed, and this incomplete or damaged view was replaced by the true view that all needs are already met. Indeed, we all witnessed how divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. How many of you have seen the movie The Little Mermaid? Fun fact, when I've asked men in jail if they've seen it, all but one has said yes. There's a scene in the movie where Ariel, the little mermaid, is really sad because she can't be on land with the handsome prince. The viewer sees her crying on the ocean floor when two eels ask her what's wrong. After explaining her tale of woe to the eels, they suggest Ariel ask Ursula, the sea witch, to use her special powers to give Ariel her wish. Of course, Ariel refuses to have anything to do with the sea witch. The eels reply, "It's only a suggestion." At that, Ariel perks up and follows through on the suggestion. If you haven't seen the movie or would like a refresher, go to YouTube and search for The Little Mermaid, The Power of Suggestion. The clip lasts for about a minute and a half. This is such a great example of how it's only a suggestion that there is a power governing us other than God. Author Evan Mellenbacher, in his September 27, 2021 article in The Sentinel, writes, "The primary challenge is never a person, institution, or corporate body, but animal magnetism claiming an authority of its own." Our textbook states, "Human sense may well marvel at discord, while to a diviner sense, harmony is the real and discord the unreal. We may well be astonished at sin, sickness, and death, and still more astounded at hatred, which lifts its hydra head, showing its horns in the many inventions of evil. But why should we stand aghast at nothingness? How shall we respond when confronted with the suggestions of these many inventions of evil? I often consider the advice shared in an April 23, 2001 Sentinel article. The author quotes her mother, who would say, "Do it with love," or "Don't do it," and then she always adds, "with love." The article continues, meaning, of course, that love should suffuse our every thought and act. Taking the forgotten lunchbox to school doesn't mean much if I do it with my teeth clenched and steam coming out of my ears. And not taking it doesn't help much either if I do it in anger or self-righteousness. More often than not, it doesn't matter what we do, but how we do it. In the September 1979 journal, Naomi Price writes, "At one time, Mrs. Eddy must have found the following words a source of comfort, for she had them displayed on her bedroom wall. When others hate, oppose, ignore, help me, dear God, to love them more." Jesus promised the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things. This Comforter, divine science, is the universal panacea. These spiritual laws are permanent, immutable, intact. We, as the image and likeness of God, are not, cannot be, tricked into believing otherwise. We know the train tracks don't touch in the distance, so we get on the train with complete confidence. We know the plane taking off isn't getting crushed, and neither are the passengers. We know the true view isn't damaged, bloody, dead, but is continuing on with never-ending progress. That's the true view of the Church of Christ Scientist. And that's the true view of its reading rooms. As Mary Baker Eddy states in Miscellaneous Writings, the Christian Science antidote for all ills is God. And she states in our textbook, universal love is the divine way in Christian Science. There's no need to wait, wander, or search for the promised land. As Jesus told us, the time is fulfilled and the kingdom of God is at hand. This science that Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy taught and demonstrated, and is documented in our leaders' writings, is truly the universal panacea. I love being part of the work at the jointly maintained reading room at SFO, and I am grateful to each of you, both fellow volunteers, church representatives and practitioners, and board members, for the dedicated work each of you does.